So thank you very much for you to be there, and I'm very honored to be one of your guests today. The I guess the main reason for Ferdi to be there today is because we did in the past 2 years what you call a transdisciplinary study of the situation in the Sahel, to simply react to facts that we were getting back from researchers active on the ground. I think we firmly believe, as I said in this slide, that without development, the security situation in the Sahel will worsen, generating, you know, clearly enormous human and financial costs for countries in and around the region, as well as in Europe. And our plea seeks to overcome the prevailing pessimism about the Sahel economic potential, which leads some to believe, I mean, and I would say Europe and France is clearly well represented in this sum, that the only solution for people is to migrate outside the Sahel zone. So our report's first message is about better coordination of all actors involved. The second message is each of the vulnerabilities experienced by the population in the Sahel, so which are demographic, economic, social, environmental, and institutional, can be addressed through targeted programs and close cooperation between the public and private sectors working with NGOs is clearly welcome on that field. The third message, finally, is that the international communities must shoulder a portion of security expenditure in the Sahel. So in my short brief, I will only focus on the first two messages. Malcolm and Nou will focus on the demographic challenges with recommendation attached to it. And Serge will focus on the security issues that clearly are of paramount importance. So the first one, when I looked at those, you know, development things that clearly have been long overlooked, I would say there are three pillars. The first pillar is about education. Why are we investing in education? In the international community, including France, which I cite specifically because all those countries are French-speaking countries, has dramatically reduced its aid for education in the Sahelian countries since 2009. Today, education is clearly underfunded, as you can see, and France allocated 13% of its augmented programmable aid, augmented meaning that you count in it the humanitarian aid, i.e. only $30 million. And the US and multilateral donors are spending only 2% on education. Growth in school enrollment rates has been rapid in the past 20 years, but with the current demographic trend in the region, these trends, you know, simply cannot be maintained, those rates, with if we expect the African states to finance that by themselves. As a consequence, and even if it's not the only reason, a lot of schools that have been opened in the past 10 years already closed. Quantity does not mean quality, and that's another issue. And surveys show the quality of public schooling experienced a sharp fall during those 20 years. So if we conclude right now, you know, through the eyes of multilaterals, the Education 2030 agenda demands currently a rethink of the funding strategies on education, given the national governments, private funders, and international donors are increasingly difficult to coordinate. Quality of an education system cannot exceed the quality of its teachers. That was one Korean official who once said this, and I think we probably can all agree with this. Approximately 10 million people have so far completed the My World Survey 1, that is a survey commanded by a lot of NGOs, very influential NGOs, plus the UN, which list a series of priorities and ask which of these are the most important for you and your family. Education, and that was not true 5 to 10 years ago, education now comes out as the number one priority in every region, across all age groups, and in all income categories. So clearly, education is key for people. But the quality of education cannot exceed, as I said, the quality of its teachers. The question we could ask is the quality of the teachers good enough if the education system does not function? And the quality of teachers you know, if you just look at the situation in the Sahel with 70% of the population being rural, should clearly be judged into what is done in the rural areas. In rural areas, you get demographic growth, clearly still 2 to 3% growth, proliferation of crisis, persistence of discriminatory education system that should be taken into account. A study recently done by UNESCO showed that barely literate teachers, often absent, doing all the work to supplement their income, represent more than 50% of teachers in Niger. On this graph, as you can see on the left side, you see that you see the rate of completion of primary schools in three countries of the Sahel. You know, barely impressive. If you look at this one, you see that even Mauritania, who shows pretty dynamic, you know, evolution, is the worst country in terms of minimum level of literacy and mathematics. This fall in quality must be addressed, and to cite only two reasons to motivate those changes, training of teachers and supervision should be efficient enough to avoid the kind of violence to which girls frequently fall victim, resulting in fewer girls being enrolled in schooling, and as well to urgently curb disaffection from public schools to the benefit of Quranic schools largely uncontrolled by the state. It is high time to upgrade the teacher training colleges, and they should be obligatory for all teachers, and to give inspectors the means to travel around the country. But that means securing long-term commitments from donors. The second pillar is agriculture. Why reinvesting in agriculture? Pretty much the same picture, but thanks to the World Bank 2008 development report that in 2008 showed how dramatic was the abandonment of aid, a critical sector for the Sahel region. You know, this has big, you know, I would say step up, but still now it's becoming pretty stable. The increase in agriculture production has been achieved mainly by extending surface and very little by improving yields. Between 16, yeah, I will pass this, you will know the numbers. What you should probably know is right now in the south of Sahel, you get 115 inhabitants per square kilometers, where research shows that extensive agriculture system is destroying the supply of land when such density is higher than 40 inhabitants per square kilometers. So if we can conclude that we need to get, you know, family agriculture, we also need to have in mind the fact that climate change is a very, very big obstacle for those countries. And that's the isolated curve that you see being strongly degraded in the past 60 years. So we need agroecology, and agroecology needs a lot of research, experience, and that should be put into the social context. This is as well largely funded by an international community. It needs to be continued with the support and carried out in the context of centers in Africa. At the same time, you need to be ready to fight for around land, as all those density intensification means more fight for land that should be coped with. How to invest in this? You know, plenty of ways, and I will go very fast on this one because we probably will discuss about it. You need to develop new crops alongside the traditional cotton industry. You make agriculture good for the for the young, and be aware that the young wants to have the same life that the young in our countries. They need to have connectivity through telephones. They need to be basically to have a modern farm if they have to stay in it, and it's clearly something that deserves infrastructures to be built. We need to have a lot of insurance systems attached to it, and we need to promote better organization of the areas. Potential for employment in the country is absolutely enormous, and that's probably the biggest one in this region. So again, don't forget the rural population is 70% of the countries. Small-scale processing food or agriculture is probably where you get the most reserve of jobs. This is clearly something that is benefiting to the poor, and that's clearly shown as the pro-poor growth opportunities in all activities. There is something else that we should not forget, which is in the Sahel you get a lot of livestock, And surprisingly, those livestock are staying there. They don't get exported elsewhere. So there are trade lines to reopen that clearly should be beneficial to the people on the ground. The last pillar, and that will be basically two slides on this one, we need to be very, very careful about strengthening national capacities in the administration. These countries in the Sahel needs real democratic models, not a formal one, largely from time to time sponsored or in some cases imposed by the outsiders. Key ministries should be strongly supported, such as the Ministry of Education, as I said it, but over the long term. So we need to have programs that last 10 years and longer. Governments and partner organizations at the end should be very, very careful not to harm having actions that would have unintentionally adverse effects and even promote conflicts. But we should not forget that everything is not national. There are local and regional challenges. And for that, regions should be clearly taken care of. If you just look at the situation in Mali, for example, that you all know, in Mali, support to the country's north without the necessary local governance reinforced tensions and certainly contributed to the happening of the conflicts. So municipalities should be supported, regions should be supported. Right now, the G5 Sahel and the ECOWAS organizations are clearly behind the security evolvements in the regions, but they maybe should do far more to promote growth and investment in the region. My final paragraph would be to move away from violence. People need to rediscover their faith in progress and feel more confident about the role of their state. This is why it must be the objectives of all actions in the region to favor a balance between quick impact activities and actions that are effective over the long term. By doing so, they will perceive the benefit of stopping violence. That's what we call the peace dividends. As donor countries, we should not forget that activities with social components are the foundation on which development activities can be built. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christophe. So I think you raised some really critical points with regard to education, agriculture, climate change, employment, national capacity, and looking at it at a national and a subnational level, and also looking at it from a regional perspective. It seems to me that many of the issues that you talk about and identify are things that we have been hearing about for quite a while for the Sahel. Could you pull out a little bit more for us what is new? What do you think is different at this moment in time as you reflect on the study and your recommendations? What's different now?
I think the willingness we had was to try to single out some key actions that should be basically made and taken. And the thing is, which it's a bit disturbing, to be honest, why is it that we need to say that an education system that is failing is a big problem for a country to develop itself? Why is it that when the population is 70% in rural areas, promoting rural development should be made is something that needs to be said? And why is it that we have to write down that we need to build an administration for a country to work? So, my answer is we just totally overlooked things that should have been seen as absolutely essential and things that should have been supported for more than 10 years already.